This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast with me, Jane Johnson. If you're not a regular listener to the show, then you may not be aware that over on our website, we have the largest library of curated career advice for mums. And it's all brought to you by our partnership of professional coaches. They provide heaps of free coaching tools, articles, advice. And of course, this podcast also aims to give you an insight into what coaching can do for you. And on that note, this episode is slightly different, almost a micro coaching session from my guest today, Catherine Shepherd. She's a hugely experienced coach and an organisational psychologist. Catherine works with employers and people one-to-one or in group sessions, and her big passion is helping us to expand our capacity to deal with whatever it is that life throws at us. She talks about resilience, and that's what we're discussing today. Catherine, I am delighted to welcome you to the Careering into Motherhood podcast. You are a highly experienced career coach, and I was just reminding myself that you started life as an accountant, didn't you?
Oh no, my dirty secret's out.
So what led you from accountancy into career coaching?
Yes, and in some ways I've kind of come full circle, because I actually, at university, I studied natural sciences. And in the third year, you specialised, and I thought I was going to do zoology because that's what I loved at the time, but had done a little bit of psychology and got really interested in that. So ended up specialising in psychology, but didn't know what to do with it. And you wouldn't believe it now, but in those days, getting into accountancy with what was then one of the big six was actually quite straightforward. So not knowing what to do, I joined one of the big six accountancy firms and trained as a chartered accountant. But from very early on, the thing I loved was working with other people, being in teams. The minute you knew something, you would then coach someone more junior in that. And from that, got involved in graduate recruitment and graduate training. So after, I think, 4 years into my career, decided to move full time into learning and development. And with that, I was off into management development and leadership development and then coaching.
I see. Oh, so it was quite linear, really, once you'd got out of accountancy.
Yeah, it didn't feel it at the time. And then it meant, you know, after having worked in learning and development for 15 plus years, I then decided I really needed a decent qualification in it. So went and did a master's in organisational psychology, which was then when it felt very full circle of, I could have done that straight after my first degree in psychology. I've sort of had this 15-year gap in between.
But that's quite interesting, and certainly from a coaching perspective, I think a lot of us, I was actually talking with my husband the other day about he in his early 50s, has finally found a career that he loves. And he said, oh, you know, I could have done this similarly, I could have done this straight out of university and saved myself a lot of grief. But I think, and really interested in your thoughts, in a way, you come to it at the right time, whatever it is, and you bring all of that experience that you have gained to whatever it is that you are about to embark on, or, you know, have found your passion for at whatever age. And I guess a lot of what coaching does is help people package all of that experience up and use it to go forwards.
I've realised that people only hear the audio on this, so I'm nodding away as Jane saying that. But yes, I think, well, I suppose if I had got into sort of organisational psychology and coaching then, would I have stayed with it, or would I have equally have tried some different things out and come back to it? But even if I'd have stayed with it, it probably would just mean I would be a different coach and person who works in leadership development than I am now, because now I can bring the business experience I've had into that coaching, whereas if I'd have gone straight into it, maybe it'd be more in depth around the psychology side of it. But I suppose as a coach, certainly something I always try to help people think about is, you know, what do you really enjoy? What do you really love? What energizes you? And you need to have had a variety of experiences to find that out.
And how did you, so someone who is in, you were in a sort of well, very much obviously an HR, as you say, learning and development, almost coaching role. How does a coach coach herself to find that next thing? Or was it just obvious to you that you were going to strike out on your own?
I think I did what I normally did, which was sort of, oh, this has come along. Well, I'll try this out and see what happens. So I had my master's place at that stage and was doing sort of contracting work whilst I was doing my master's part time. And then sort of at the end of that, I was thinking, well, what do I do now? Was going for head roles again in interview and thinking, sort of coming out thinking, they can tell my heart's not really in it. I can tell my heart's not really in it. And happened to see an advert for a consultancy that I knew and thought, well, let's give this a whirl and we'll see what happens. And then discovered that that's what I really enjoyed. And then after 3 years employed as a consultant, I then needed the flexibility of working for myself.
I see. So it was sort of more of an iterative process as well there.
Yes. And I think that's something that also I do in coaching. It's what I wrote about in my last blog on career changes, actually, is I think women, particularly working mums as well, they quite often, if they're coming for career coaching, it's quite often because they're looking for the right opportunity. And I try to help people think about, actually, don't pin your hopes on the right opportunity. Pin your hopes on a next opportunity that's kind of good enough in terms of a next step for you to find out whether you love it, whether you hate it, whether it works with everything else that you've got on, and, you know, sort of broaden your net a bit to try out. I think if we're not careful, we can get quite sucked into it's got to be right and it's got to be perfect and it's got to tick every tick box we have.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. I think places like LinkedIn, where people tend to go if they're looking for the next thing, are just littered with people talking about how lucky they feel that they've got this role or they've got to this point and so on. I'm feeling fairly average in my role. Doesn't really make great social media engagement. No,
I said that at the end of my blog, actually. I said, on my LinkedIn page, does it describe... We moved to Australia for 3 years. My husband was seconded with work, but I didn't go with a job. You know, does it describe that it took me 7 months and 10 plus interviews to get a job and what a failure I felt through a lot of that process? No, it doesn't. Does it describe my head of L&D role at Cancer Research UK, which was full time? At the same time, my son was only 3, 4, and how many times I would run home late in floods of tears thinking, no, of course it doesn't. Yes, I think, yeah, LinkedIn, much as it's useful to look at what's out there, like all social media, everyone paints a positive picture on it, don't they?
Yeah, should come with a health warning, yes. So interestingly, what you were talking about there with the length of time it took you to find the role in Australia and when your son was very young and so on, it hops back to this subject of resilience, which I know is something you're very passionate about and something that you talk a lot about with your coaching, with your work. We talk about this word resilience.
We do indeed. And the media does a lot as well. It's one of those that gets flung. And I suspect even now there'll be some people listening to this and going, oh, buzzword, right, I'm going to stop listening now.
Yes, exactly. And I think especially in the last 2 years with the pandemic, again, this idea that children have to be resilient or we as mums have to be resilient. What's your view of what is resilience? What does resilience mean to you?
Well, I have to admit, I knew you were going to ask this, and the sort of person I am, I have to go back to sort of a dictionary definition. And I did look up a couple of definitions that I think might be useful for people, actually. The first of which is sort of quite a sort of rigorous scientific definition, which comes from a book that Carrie Cooper wrote in 2013. He's actually a Sir Carrie Cooper. He's possibly one of the few sort of academics and psychologists who have been knighted, because he's been working around mental well-being for the last 20 years and has done a lot in organisations, helping them look after their people more. And his definition is being able to bounce back from setbacks. And that's what I think gets popularised, but actually he keeps going. So he says it's being able to bounce back from setbacks and to keep going in the face of tough demands and difficult circumstances, including the enduring strength that builds from coping well with challenging or stressful events. And I just, even though it's a very long definition, I like the fact that it's got the different bits to it. So I think popularised resilience is all about, you know, bouncing back, that, you know, we were locked down for 3 months and then hopefully some of us have bounced back to a life that feels similar before lockdown. But I like the fact that it's also got the keeping going bit in it.
Yes.
I think bouncing back sometimes puts a bit of pressure on us that we've
definitely
got to bounce back to where we were before. Whereas there's something about you just need to keep going, you know, just day in, day out, grind through it. However, you might not feel brilliant through it, but there's just something about keeping going with it. And then the sort of the really, in some ways, a quite positive piece of, you know, that enduring strength that builds from coping well. So when I think of lockdown, I'm sure there are things that all of us did to keep going that we've now got in our toolkit for when it gets difficult again. You know, that even, you know, you walked around the block for 10 minutes because that's all you were allowed to do. Maybe people have then thought, oh, well, I need to do that every day, because actually it kind of did help. So I like that it's got the three different bits to it.
Yes, I know what you mean. So in your mind, can resilience be trained?
Absolutely. So both in my mind and the research, research says so as well. Another person I quite like in this area is someone called Dr. Chris Johnston. He's trained both as a GP and a mental health practitioner as well. So he's got a very practical, pragmatic, I've worked with people struggling with these kind of things view on life. And he has this really nice way of checking in about sort of how resilient you're feeling. So if you imagine a graph where how much challenge you're facing is on the horizontal axis and how much capacity you have to cope with that challenge is on the vertical axis. He says you can then kind of divvy that up into three areas. So if you've got loads and loads of resource and not much challenge, you're probably in a sort of green, easy zone. You know, that's when you're feeling sort of relaxed and rested and contented and happy. Although for those of us who work at quite a fast pace, equally, we might feel a bit bored and lazy and guilty. Then you next, where your sort of capacity and your challenge sort of match, you're sort of in an orange growth zone, or maybe that's when you're sort of learning and motivated and engaged. But then if it tips over and you've got really high challenge and not much resource to deal with it, you're in a red zone, a sort of over the edge. That's where you're kind of stressed and out of control and you can't think and you're not feeling. And what we can do is we can do things on both those axes. So we can reduce our challenge, but in particular, we can learn things that increase our resources. And that will then mean that we can face more and more challenges and still kind of be resilient, if that's the label for it, through it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think sometimes people find it difficult to say, I am struggling. But actually turning around to someone and saying, over the last week or over the last couple of weeks, you know, talk to me about how challenged you felt and what challenge you've been facing. And, okay, if you would give that a 0 to 10, where would that be? And then equally over that last week or 2 weeks, you know, how well equipped have you felt to deal with it? How resourced have you felt? Where would you put that 0 to 10? And it's like, oh, so you're saying this week you've mostly been in green and orange. Sounds like quite a good week. Or if someone's saying to you, loads of challenges, not much resources, it's like, oh, that sounds like you've felt quite out of control, over the edge. Tell me a bit more about it. And it's just, I think without pejorative labels, it's just quite a nice way to get into it.
Definitely, because there is this sense of stigma, isn't there, that if you're saying I'm not feeling very resilient, or I can't, you know, effectively you're saying you can't cope. And I think particularly women, particularly mothers, we feel an admission that we can't cope is very difficult to put out there, I think.
Rather than saying, actually, do you know what? The challenges I've faced over the last month and actually what I've been able to, what's been in my toolkit to cope with those, you know, challenges of being greater than my toolkit, that might soften it. He's got quite a nice, I'm about to say acronym. Do I mean acronym? Series of letters.
Yeah.
He's deliberately come up with an SSRI acronym, which you might know is one of the groups of antidepressants. So he's quite tongue-in-cheek. He's deliberate. And when he explains it, he's deliberately tongue-in-cheek with that. And I quite like that because, you know, actually antidepressants can be part of some, they're part of my toolkit. I don't know whether they'll be part of the toolkit for other people listening. But he talks about SSRI in terms of strategies, strengths, resources and insights. Strategies are all the thing. He also says common sense doesn't necessarily mean common practice. So strategies are all those things that we know practically we should be doing. You know, good sleep, balanced diet, reasonable amount of exercise, possibly some kind of meditation or mindfulness, you know, all those all those things that we know
should,
in our heads.
Yep.
Whether that actually turns into practice is another matter. If people listening are anything like me, it might be a bit patchy, where I have phases of, you know, really looking after myself and phases where it kind of all goes out the window. Strengths is kind of what are your strengths that you know that you can draw on when you are facing pressure. So for someone like myself, I'm quite sort of a organized and planned person. So when I'm feeling under pressure, I'll make a plan about what are some of the little things that I can tick off. How am I going to fit those big things in? Have I got a holiday in the diary? And if I haven't, let's sort that out because that always makes me feel a lot better. Resources are, you know, things you turn to, whether that's people, things you read, things you listen to. And insights, the sort of self-talk you give yourself. So I don't know what you were like in lockdown, but one of the things that I kept saying to myself is, this will end. When you're in that kind of grind and it's feeling like it's never going to change, that sort of mantra about, you know, this will end. And I was fortunate enough that no one I knew passed away with COVID, so I could also get to the end of the day and think, well, no one's died. Even, you know, even if you'd had a dreadful day where everyone was on top of one another, everyone was struggling, you could at least think, you know, no one in my immediate family's died. So it's just possibly a bit selfish for those who are listening to this where they unfortunately did know people who passed away. But that was kind of one of my
things. Yes, how you coped. Yes, of course.
So I quite like his, you know, reminding us about the key things, turning to your strategies, turning to your strengths, thinking about resources in terms of people and books and audio, and then that sort of insights, that sort of inner mantra you tell yourself. And that's where some of the studies have shown focusing on things like that does kind of build your resilience and build your capacity to help with challenge.
Yes, and that's really interesting, Catherine. I hadn't sort of realised this aspect of coaching, that you are almost teaching people coping skills for life or whatever it is that they're going through. I think some of the time coaching can feel as though you're getting somebody's experience, advice, it's not advice, but you're getting somebody for that hour. And then when it finishes, you both go your separate ways. You work on something until you come back again. But actually educating and sharing these kinds of toolkits that can be deployed, that you can use, you know, forever more is fascinating. It really...
It's all things we know in ourselves. So you can ask someone about their habits and you can ask someone about their sleep routines and the people that they see and the... You know, and we all know it in ourselves, but one thing that coaches are good at is holding other people to account. I was just thinking of one of my simplest moments. I can remember coaching someone about sleep, and you know, we'd got onto electronic devices, and you know, but I have to have my phone in the bedroom because I use it as an alarm. you know, and me sort of saying, could you use something else as an alarm? And so my key coaching contribution in that was like, she then went out and bought an alarm. She knew the next time she would meet me, we'd have to say she'd done something about it. So it's all things that we know in ourselves, but, you know, a coach will kind of prod you around them and then hold you to account around it. But as you say, hopefully that will then become a habit. So a year later, after you've had the coaching, you can probably still hear my voice in their head going,
yes,
you could just have an alarm clock.
Well, I'm awful with my phone. The last couple of years, because my mother was very ill, I got into the habit of leaving my phone right by my bed expecting a call. Yes, that sadly is no longer a consideration, but I've still got my phone. I was saying just last night, I need to break this habit. So there you are. I'm going to go and buy an alarm clock. And I shall think of you this evening.
Right. I'll drop you an email in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay,
with just the
that's
title
a deal.
Phone. Yes, when you go to bed tonight, and remember this conversation, think, right, leave it in the kitchen charging.
Yes, it's so true, because I mean, it's slightly off topic, but it stops me from reading because it's far too easy just to grab the phone and scroll, and it stops me from sleeping. It stops me from all kinds of good things that, as you say, we know we should really be doing.
I'm sure it's not off topic, because if anyone's listened to this, I imagine so many people are nodding away at this stage about just what you said. And they do affect our sleep, and sleep is such a key part of resilience. So, and also I think something that finally kind of got me into good habits with it was once my son had his own phone and I wanted to be role modelling good phone habits. That I think that's something that can sometimes tip us into good habits as well.
That's very true. Yes, we kind of expect very high standards of our children and don't always uphold ourselves to those same ones.
I've had mixed success with that. But
have you? Have you? We've got all of that to come, I am sure. I want to touch a little bit before we finish on this idea of resilience and age. So as I mentioned to you, you know, fast heading into my 50th year, and I think, you know, there is a sense of resilience for me, which comes with just being older, having been through things that would have rocked me previously, but now don't. But I also think there's quite a dangerous narrative that says, because you have all this experience, you should just develop the rhino hide and soldier on. And actually, that isn't the case. So I'm interested in your views again around resilience and how and when it affects people.
Well, I suppose if I go back to that graph of, if you think about it, it's kind of the challenges you are facing on the horizontal versus the capacity and strategies you've got on the vertical. I wonder whether with age, because we just accumulate life experience and we've faced more and more challenges, whether maybe we can sometimes be a bit better about putting some of the small challenges that might have faced us in our 20s in perspective a bit more. But then equally there are days when, you know, the small challenge does still get to us. But I wonder whether that is just the, when you have faced, you know, as I have, when you faced postnatal depression, when you faced caring for someone with cancer, and then, you know, COVID, whether that gives you a better perspective on some of the smaller challenges, not sure. But then I also wonder on the capacity side, whether you've just had more time to try out more things, and so you know what you need to do when you are feeling overwhelmed, because you've been there before and you've tried some things out and you know what works and you know what doesn't work. So maybe, you know, the first time you hit a really rough patch in your teens or your early 20s, you know, you haven't been there before, so you don't know what strategies you need to turn to. Whereas if you hit a rough patch later in life, you're like, right, I need to make sure I'm going for a walk each day. I need to make sure I'm on my exercise bike 3 times a week. I need to see my best friend who always makes me laugh. I need to, I don't know whether that helps. Although equally, I know, you know, I turned 50 this year as well. And, you know, the joys of hormones or lack of hormones and fluctuating hormones and broken sleep can completely floor me at the moment. So that doesn't mean I am more resilient as I am older, and sometimes I'm less. But yeah, so I wonder whether maybe it's your sort of, maybe your challenges versus capacities graph is bigger as you get older. I don't know, I haven't thought that one through before, but that, I wonder whether it's, whether it might be about that.
Yes, that's really interesting. I would love to see this graph, and we will share it for people so you can find it in the show notes. But
and I should reiterate again, this is not me, this is Dr. Chris Johnson. Yes. I will fully credit him, but it was just, I've used it with other people, and then I know people have then used, there's an organization I work with where I've worked a lot with their manager population, and then they've been using it in teams to talk about, you know, how each person's feeling in the team and therefore who's overloaded, who might have some resource to cope. And so it is just a nice straightforward language.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Well, thank you very much indeed. I've really enjoyed talking to you about this. It's been something slightly different for us. So thank you very much indeed for your time.
And you are welcome, because also selfishly, it made me look back on some of my notes and have a moment with myself about, oh, what are my strategies and strengths and resources? How are they going at the moment? So I had to get on my exercise bike this morning before
did you?
Because I was like, I've got to, you know, common sense isn't common practice with me in exercise. So I was like, right, I've got to role model that I'm looking after myself.
Brilliant.
This morning. So yeah, it's been a boost for me, both physically and mentally. So
That's really good. Lots of interesting insight and some slightly different perspectives there from Catherine. She really is incredibly knowledgeable. Catherine will be running a free live session for our members very soon, so make sure you're subscribed to our Facebook group, Careering into Motherhood, or sign up via the website for our newsletter and to be kept informed of all the freebies on offer. You can find out more about the academic research that Catherine was talking about in the show notes. The people whose work she cited were Sir Carrie Cooper and Dr. Chris Johnston. That's all for now. Please do leave a review and follow, and I will be here again next week with more.